This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Today's episode of the Mind Sculptors podcast is sponsored by TCG Player, your source for all your trading card game needs. Use our link in the description the next time you get your cards to help support the show. Today's episode is also made possible by our Patreon subscribers. If you want to support the show directly, head over to patreon.com/themindsculptors and you can become part of the Sculpty family today. Or if you don't want to do any of that, leave a like and comment on YouTube or a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts as an offering to Algorithm Jesus.
So I just finished Game of Thrones.
Okay.
Okay.
Confusing. And I get it now. I get it.
Season 8
sucked so bad. I was like, literally up to season 8, episode 3. I was like, I don't get it. Are people just picky? Like, what the fuck happened? And then the ending happened. And I was like, that's the payoff. That's the fucking payoff after 8 years.
Game of Thrones is different than like How I Met Your Mother, because How I Met Your Mother's ending is like actually fine.
Yeah.
The issue with it is that people watched it for a decade and then it wasn't satisfying to watch that after a decade and see the ending. But if you're like me and you watched it all at once, it was fine. Yeah. Game of Thrones, on the other hand,
I watched it all at once. Was not fine.
How long did it take you to go through the whole thing?
Honestly, we started. I think we started
just a few weeks ago, right?
Yeah, like, we. I think it was on Halloween.
All 8 seasons. Oh my god, it's a lot of.
Lou and I have literally not done. Well, so we'll do other stuff, right? But like, we'll just put Game of Thrones on the background. And like, I also am someone who likes to listen to stuff while I drive. I don't need to like look at something, so I will just put it on while we drive in the mirror. And I'm not.
I'm one of those people that gets bothered though when they do all of these seasons of like, oh, this person has to journey from this location to this location, and that takes a long time. So here's half a season of them just on the trail, and then season 8 comes along, and it's like I have a dragon now, and I can get there like that.
Yeah,
you know, everything's sped up and quick.
Fast travel function.
I love the part of why I liked Game of Thrones all, you know, the first 7 seasons was the fucking slow burn.
Yeah.
Like, I love slow burns. Like, Persona 5 is famously my favorite game, and that game takes for fucking ever to get moving.
Yeah. I have like 40 hours into that game, and I'm pretty sure I am scratching the surface of it.
Yeah, Persona 5 like doesn't start until you're about like 50 hours in. Like, the tutorial is like 40 some hours. Yeah. Like, that's the thing.
It's a sick fucking game, but like, Jesus Christ, that one's a slog.
Like, it is a great game, but it's just like, I love slow burns. And so, like, for me, Game of Thrones was perfect.
Yeah.
And I felt like they were really doing well. To, like, things were starting to build up. There was a lot of tension. Everything's getting there. And then.
Okay. Also, can we talk about, because I've been saying this the entire time we're watching, I was like, they just literally turned Bran into Professor X.
Yes. Yes. Well, have you read the books?
Just Professor X.
Have you read the books?
No.
They cut out so much. Bran is like overpowered Bran as shit rules. In the books. He can do everything in the books. He's a god. And then they just were just like, now you sit in a wheelchair and you can see some things.
Yeah. Also, like, literally every 3 minutes he's like, I'm not a man, I'm a bird. And you're like, shut up.
the books, like, I'm frustrated that like they clearly did the ending because, like, you know, obviously they were like running out of material to do because the books are not finished.
Yeah.
And it's kind of frustrating that they haven't finished that, like, George Martin hasn't like finished the books.
Yeah.
Because, like, we have an ending and it's like, I don't know if I'm supposed to be mad at him because he did help write that.
Yeah.
Or am I supposed to be mad at the other HBO and all of these people?
Can you imagine? So that's why, like, he hasn't released the books, because he was like, I fucking killed it with this ending. It's going to be so good. And then the show came out and they were like, yeah, showrunners, you guys did a bad job.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, but everyone blames the directors on that. No, but the pain. So I was a 17-year-old boy reading these books in the end of 2014, and I flew through all five books that exist in like a 2-month span.
Dude, I used to have,
I was ecstatic.
Used to have a really nice, I sold it years ago, but it was like this really nice limited edition hardcover version of A Dance with Dragons. And it was like one of my favorite things that I had. And I kid you not, after the ending of Game of Thrones, I was like, fuck this book. And it was just like,
damn.
Send it to the dragons.
All right, meanwhile, we've gotten Dune. Our non-magic commentary out, right? We sort of purged that. No,
Dune,
good.
On the other hand, is Dune, a masterpiece.
I literally have only read half of the first book, but I literally watched, or I like was obsessed with it, and then I ran out of places to read it for free.
I worked at a rock climbing gym in Boston, and one of my fellow employees did like opera and choir, and he would just sing the Dune soundtrack into the microphone, and it was beautiful.
The movie is great. The books are also great.
I keep forgetting you're also from Boston.
Highest conversion rate of states. Highest conversion rate of graduates.
Let's go. Hey
guys.
100%.
Welcome to the Mind Sculptors. We're coming to you from Beantown, baby.
Two ex-Bostonians now CEDH grinders.
Wait, are we supposed to talk like this for the entire episode?
Oh, yeah, dude.
So Ian has a friend that is currently on Survivor, or was on Survivor. They're currently on. And the first episode comes on, and Ian and I will just text each other the whole time during Survivor on Wednesday nights. And the first episode comes on and they introduced this guy, and I text Ian. I was like, he has to be playing this accent up. And he goes, nope, that's just how he talks.
No,
I was like,
no, like, actually the craziest Boston accent I've ever heard, to the point where I had forgotten that, like, because we were friends, like, we would like mess with him by like literally impersonating him, right? So like first episode of the show comes on, because I haven't seen him since college, right? Yeah. And I like do a perfect impression, and I was like, I forgot I had that in my pocket.
Was he from Lowell?
I actually don't know. I know he's okay. Like pretty like in the actual like deep Boston.
He's got to go.
Oh, but
he's deep in the bean.
He sounds like he's from Beantown, baby.
My grandma lived in Boston for 92 years, and as a child, we would always say stop market, say stop market.
What's your opinion on Dunkin' Donuts?
It's good. I don't drink a lot of coffee, but the donuts are nice. I mainly remember going to Dunkin' Donuts late into the night after doing activities I shouldn't as a child. That's my experience with Dunkin' Donuts.
So, like, amazing.
Yeah. Mine was joining the workforce and being like, if there's not a Dunkin's every other block, I'm going to fucking lose my mind.
But there is a Dunkin's every other block. We're fucking fine. It's crazy.
But then
Philly, and it's just like, where's the Dunks?
Where's that? I have to drive like 30 miles to get to the closest Dunks. What's going on?
This Boston cream isn't from Boston. This is not the real stuff.
You can't fool me with this fake cream.
Yeah, this is fake. This is Eagles fans cream. I'm not a fan.
Doesn't work. Like three people
who watched Belichick didn't sign off on this.
Yeah. This is Nick Foles. It's a backup. It's okay, but it's not the best.
Brady wouldn't put up with it.
Oh my god.
Oh, that's why. That's why he's in Tampa now. Florida crepes, baby.
That's amazing. Welcome to the show, everybody. Yes. This is the Mind Sculptor podcast. Mm-hmm. I am your host, Callahan, and also my lovely other co-host, who is from Beantown. It's your boy fucking fucking Ian, baby.
Yep, it's me, fucking Ian. That's my, that's what they call me on the internet.
I felt like that accent that I had was like somewhere in between like the like it was somewhere in between Morty stuttering and Alan. Like it was like mental on that Alan? Spectrum. Yeah, like mental misplay Alan.
That was like a 60s early Saturday morning cartoon trying to do a Boston accent. So Alan. You know what I mean?
I don't know. It, for me, I got like, you know, when they like animate gangsters and they're like rats, like that's the kind of accent I got.
Like, the Green Mouse Detective.
You don't want to fuck around with these pipes, kid. You don't want to be in the sewer.
Also joining us this week, all the way up from, they're shipping up from Boston.
Originally.
It's, everybody's favorite space like thing. It's
damaged antenna.
Yeah, space antenna. It's Max, otherwise known as Wounded Satellite.
Woo.
And I have to, so it was funny. So I edit Ian's podcast or Ian's show now, right? And so I'm sitting at my in-law's house, I had my laptop with me, and Ian sends me the episode. It's already out. That is talking about Chaos Treasure Series 6. And in that, he's talking about your deck, right? And what you played in that event. And he goes, all right, we've got Max. So I probably shouldn't say his name. I shouldn't dox him. Cut that out, Cal. And then he stops, goes back into it. And goes, yeah, we've got Wounded Satellite doing it again. And, you know, Max has really just been killing it in the same fucking breath. I called him immediately to roast.
I say though in my show, I'm like, I'm Max Sternberg, aka Wounded Satellite. Yeah, like, it's fine. They can know my real name. Yeah, my social security number is,
you know. Yeah, yeah. If it wasn't on the Eminence profile every time like you looked at the deck, like I don't think I would have actually cared as much when Cal called me and told me about it. I was like, yeah, I fucked up. It's fine.
Who cares?
I knew it was fine, but I was like, Ian, you I shouldn't use Max's real name. Anyway, Max did a great show.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I appreciate the kind words. I appreciate the kind words.
Oh man. So I actually had the great opportunity of getting to meet Max at two different Columbus events, actually. Columbus, what was it? Star City Games Columbus, and then at the Mox Masters Invitational. And thought we'd have him on and figure out what the 10 best decks in CEDH are after the month of November, or for the month of November. Yeah, after, I think, is the correct term I'm looking for. Again, I said this last month, if you want to see like the statistical analysis of the month broken down with, you know, what was the top 4%, top 16%, win rate, all that stuff. You can go over to at Callahanas here. It's my pinned tweet, has all of that stuff right there in a spreadsheet for you to take a look at. And it was a really big month. There were 22 decks that made the standings this month, which is a giant increase from what it has been in the past. We have historically, it's been mostly around like 12 to 13 decks will end up making the cut because of the fact
that. What is that, the cut?
So the cut is, so what we, the parameters I have are, they need to be a minimum of 10 entries into events, and event size needs to be a minimum of 50 players. So, you know, anything that is 50 players or more and 10 deck entries or more, we count it. And so, you know, that kind of helps give you a sample size that you can kind of work with. Because, like, you know, I can't give you a good win percentage or idea off of like 8 games. It doesn't, that doesn't mean anything. 10 games is usually you're starting to, you know, in most like sports and stuff, 10 games, you have an idea of what's going on. So with that being said, if you want to check that out, head over to @CallahanIsHere on Twitter, and it's my pinned tweet, and you can check all that stuff out there. I'm going to be referencing those stats throughout the video and throughout the podcast. So without further ado, which that, Ian, is the correct way of saying using that term. Max, you are our guest this month. And amazing. So what's your honorable mention for the month of November?
My honorable mention is a surprising one. This is a deck that I think if I was making my list really quickly and not thinking too hard on it, I would have naturally put in the top 10. But based on how it's been doing lately and just where I think the meta is right now, my honorable mention is Dargo Thrasios. A deck I know and love and I think is super, super powerful. Obviously, one of its premier champions has not been playing it recently, which might be hurting its overall effectiveness. But the way I look at the deck, I mean, I view us as very firmly in a mid-range meta. I'm sure I'll say many times throughout this podcast. But because we're in this more mid-range meta that's a little bit slowed down, and Dargo Thras tends to feed on these like more quick combo, you play out your artifacts, I make my Dockside, I win really fast game plans. And it has no static interaction, no Dran that's oppos, nothing that really holds your opponents back in this more true mid-range slowed down game. I think it's a bit weaker. And if you just don't let them have the Dockside, it's kind of hard for them to explode. And then they lack the proper interaction and static effects to stop your other opponents from winning the game.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. I think also like bringing up the fact that Freedom Waffle is on Blue Farm now, right? Like is a really big point of it, because, you know, for months straight up, we would look through and like look at the Dargo Thrasios performances, and it would be like sometimes Manila Midget, but they had like a period where they weren't like doing as many tournaments. And then it was Freedom, and it would be like he would make the top cut and everyone else would just be like 17th, 23rd, 42nd place. Like the deck was just not doing well in other people's hands. And I think it's worth mentioning, because if a list is only being executed through certain pilots, that's something to be said as a dock against it, which is, you know, something we've been saying actually for Canon for a little while, right? We've been calling it like a deck that includes mastery, right? So it's kind of interesting how high we've been rating Canon, given the fact that there is such a floor ceiling ratio with that deck. When we look at Dargo Thrasios, it's really like two or three pilots who have actually like ever done okay with it, right?
Well, I think the difference with Kinnan is Kinnan just has the player base to support, you know, having that that high floor, because of the fact that just so many more, like it's just hundreds of people play Kinnan every month. It's like you can have that high floor, but you just have a bigger mass of people playing the deck and learning the deck and getting into it. Whereas with Dargo Thrasios, it's a little bit more fringe. And so like, yeah, but it's also a deck that I love. And I say this every fucking month, I have all the cards for the deck just sitting on my desk and I haven't put it together. So it's a deck that I want to play, but I just haven't put it together for some reason. Ian, what is your honorable mention for the month of
November? Yeah, it's a list that you, myself, Judge Max, and a couple others have all like pointed out as quite strong, which is just Thrasios File Smasher. I think despite it not really being putting up a ton of results. So like, oh, I guess I should also shout out Jorman, who just whomped on Bonfire with this thing and actually won the entire tournament playing this list. But there's several variations of it. I mean, this feels like I'm throwing back to like 2020 when was it Canadian Cheese Rush, Cal? Is that the name of it?
Yeah.
So way back in the day, the End of the North guys came in and they just like kind of flipped the format upside down with this deck that was like hybrid infinite mana, hybrid Ad Nauseam game plan. And it feels like we're just, you know, at this point in the format recognizing like, hey, that deck was actually pretty good. And I've actually had like 8 independent conversations with people, all of which people have been like, hey, Thrasios Vial seems actually really strong right now. All right, I'm going to go do something else. And for some reason, it's just one of those things.
It's
like,
not a sexy deck. That's the thing. No. It's not a sexy deck. I have been playing it a lot recently, and its win rate is stupid. especially the way I've been playing it is kind of like a ROG side deck that has a commander that, okay, you blew your load, you weren't able to go off. Cool, you have Thrasios in the command zone and you can get back into this. It might not be fast, but you've got this piece in the command zone that is able to kind of get you back into games. Yeah. And that has been more or less like okay. I think the biggest advantage of it is actually green adds a lot to turbo strategies. And I don't think that green has been fully explored to its like fullest extent. Bring to Light has been an MVP in that deck. Summer Bloom has been an MVP in that deck. Like I am a big fan of Thrasvile and very much agree with you on that honorable mention.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think green is the second best tutor color. Like black gives you unconditional, but then the efficiency of green creature tutors is wild. And I really love that it's a deck that, you win on two different axes of play that are entirely separate. And you can usually only pick to stop one. It's kind of like when you're facing Najeela and it's like, are they doing combat wins? Are they doing breach wins? Whatever. You're on that same idea where, okay, I have a Kin of Assault line or I've got the Adnaz breach line. Which one do you want to try and stop? And I'll just look the other way.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, right? It's like you can just do like the reason I enjoy that archetype specifically is because you can be like, oh man, my Nas got stopped. Dockside combo?
Yeah.
It work?
Is it, Ryan, sure? Is it a Cloudstone deck?
No. It can be. Some people.
Well, and that's kind of the thing with it is it's a super malleable deck where it's like you can kind of tune it to whatever it is you want to be doing. And so like for me, mine is a dramatic scepter build of it. And so it works more on that axis of things. But you can also do the Kin and Basalt lines. You can also do, the Dockside Curio lines. Like there's so many things that you can do with it. And it's so hard to deal with because
do you think people are held up on the fact that it used to be Curious Control and they still imagine it as Curious Control and they just don't think 100%, that's good.
100%.
Okay. I think that's a part of it for sure.
So definitely keep an eye out for that deck. It is fast and it will win and grind and it sucks to play against but it's fucking fun as hell to play. My honorable mention for the month of November is a deck that Ian has been playing quite a bit lately, and that is Tevish Krom. Tevish Krom had a pretty good November, I would say. However, it only had 12 total entries. And historically on this show, I have been slow to add decks with sub 20 entries to my top 10. So Tevish Krom is a deck that I really like. I think is really solid and is really well positioned. I want to see it. I want to see more of it.
I don't know, like a 36% win rate for the month. It's got to be like worth a little bit more.
Sure, we'll be talking about the deck again in a sec. You know,
you're two of the entries on there, right? So? I could hand you a fucking ham sandwich and you'd top 16 with that's it. So it's like I get the deck is really strong, but again, it's the same reason that like this is the first month that it got onto the standings at all. So it hasn't even been hitting the 10. Like threshold,
and I so put it on last month, I think.
What'd you say?
I said I think I put it on last month.
Oh, it was on your rank or power rankings. I'm talking about the standings, right?
Oh, sure.
So, like, it wasn't even making the standings threshold, and so that's like for me where I look at it, and I'm like, this is its first month, even making my standings. Mm-hmm. So I want to wait and get more data on it before I sit here and proclaim it as a top deck of the format, right? It is a deck you got to keep an eye on, and I think is probably one of the best positioned decks in the format, but I want to see, get a little bit more information. With that being said, Max, what is your number 10 selection in the Mind Sculptor's draft?
I gotta ask you one quick question. Do you have a 3D printer?
I do not have a 3D printer.
Okay, I think we need to get someone to 3D print Ian a deck box that is a ham sandwich. So then he can just have a deck box that's a ham sandwich to bring to events.
Pretty good. Make him a deck box that is a roll of duct tape, because the other thing that I say is I could hand Ian a roll of duct tape and he would top 16 with it.
So, you do say ham sandwich a lot more, though.
I do say ham sandwich
a lot. That's like the main thing, though. Oh, you can combo with a ham sandwich. You can win with it. But don't get mad at me, Ian. My number 10 deck is Sisse Weatherlight Captain. Sisse, super good. Sisse is a super, super powerful deck. It's in the top 10. That's not trying to say it is all bad. The way I view Sisse is, I think it's a deck with more Brewer's Advantage than it deserves. I think that if someone's against a deck that, let's say they're not used to, like Thrasio's Vile Smasher, where it's like, oh, this is Kinnan combos, this is Breach combos. If you've never played against that exact deck, you can still kind of understand how to interact with it in certain moments in certain ways. Sisse is very specified, unique knowledge. And so I think it kind of dunks on the Swiss, where people just don't know what's up. And then Sisse is going to struggle with those like top 16 pods where people understand the deck and understand the lines and can see what it's doing and how it's coming, rather than sneaking in this unexpected victory when people just think everything is fine when it isn't. But overall, I love that the deck is incredibly explosive. It can win in this really interesting, like it's a whole tree of different lines it can go for. And it deserves so much credit for the amount of different lines it can take to win. Another weakness is just that it's a really good Gilded Drake matchup. It's a deck that's pretty non-functional without the commander, which can make it a little bit linear as all the lines do funnel through Sisse. It got a really awesome boost in Agatha Soul Cauldron. I think that's like one of the best calling cards for the deck in recent time, that it did get this like awesome thing. Oh, my Gaia's Cradle just gives me Sisse's activation.
Yeah.
Like that's fantastic. It fights through stacks much, much better than people expect. Like one of my big surprises from playing your Sisse deck a few times was there was a Graph Digger's Cage on the board every single game, and every single game I could not have given less of a shit.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I went through this irrelevantly. Yeah. The only thing that annoys you is Weathered Runestone. Then you're like, that sucks. And Oppo and Weathered Runestone, everything else, you don't care. So it's more resilient than it should be, and it really gets to fly under the radar, which I even played Sisse last night, and I was just sitting there like, I can't do anything. I'll tutor out this nothingness. And then I'm like, okay, here's a Dockside, here's a Tyvar.
That's the thing about Sisse that makes it dangerous, though, because we've talked about this on the show before, where it will do that thing where it's just kind of sitting there not doing anything. And so people will be like, we can give it an activation, it's fine. But then it gets the one activation, and then the game is over. And so it's like, I've literally had multiple games won because my other two opponents were like, oh, let's let the Sisse player tutor to try and find an answer for what's going on. And I'm just like, that's not what they're going to do. They're never going to do that. They never do that.
Sisse does nothing until it does everything.
Yes.
That was like last night. I was like, oh, it's just a Sisse activation for three. And they were like, I think that's okay. We're going to let that one go. And I was like, sweet. Here's a three fairy. Here's a three fairy. Yeah, here's a three fairy. Never. I like looked through the whole deck and I set it down and I like looked through the whole deck like I was still thinking. And I was like, okay, here's a three fairy.
You're such a goblin.
No.
Listen, you got to use every trick. And listen, that's that survivor mentality, baby. Yeah. Ian,
yeah, I've never done that.
Ian, what is your number 10 for the month of November?
You know, we made mention earlier, no Dimir Dex and Cal's honorable mention, but mine will be Talion in my number 10 slot. Talion's like out there doing well. Max P had obviously a great result with it. This time around, making top 16 at Cook. No, what's it called?
Top I mean, I had a lot of Atlanta. Top 16s recently.
Top Deck Expo is what I'm referring to. Yeah. Obviously, like that big result at a huge tournament that was not an easy tournament by any means.
Right.
Obviously, a great job there. The deck's been doing okay. You know, a lot of top 16s, not a lot of wins and a lot of fours, right? It sort of came down a little bit from my previous months just because, like, you know, top four at Lotus Con did a couple stuff
you
like that.
You had it so. At 10 last month.
Right at 10 last time. Okay, then you know.
You have had Talion at number 10 2 months in a row now.
Okay.
You didn't even have it ranked in September.
Because it's my honorable mention that month.
No, that was Kirk. Kirk.
What?
Really? September, Talion was my honorable mention.
Weird. Okay. I guess I'm wrong. Either way. I think the deck's good. I think it's just hard to win with, as Max very well knows. And you know, it's It's a deck that grinds really, really well. I mean, if we're in a situation where everyone's like, oh, yeah, Rishi Study's broken right now. Not that it isn't always, but, you know, one in the command zone is pretty okay. So yeah. That's kind of where we're at with it.
Yeah. My number 10 for the month of November is, we were talking about how mid-range is back on the menu, and the king and queen of mid-range has made a return. It's Thrasios and Tindra, baby.
Thrasios and Tindra
had 5 top 16s, 3 top 4s, and a tournament win over the past month. So, like,
a tournament win?
Yeah.
Was that a smaller event, though?
I think it was a smaller event, but yeah, it did.
It was the same
50. It was over the 50. I think it was like a 60 person event or something like that. Okay. But regardless,
it was the same guy who top forward at Top Deck, Alex.
Oh, okay.
No.
It was Spleenface who won.
Alex won like a top the silver event on the new series.
Oh, okay. So no, this was 50. I think this was a Buffalo, one of the Buffalo events.
Gotcha.
So, but they had like a bigger cap this time, and it like, so it hit my standings. But yeah, so Thrasios Tindra had a very good month. It actually had a better win percentage, not by a lot, but by just a few fractions, better win percentage than Atraxa Grand Unifier. If you saw on Twitter, our friend Dan pointed that out in a picture on Twitter. And I just replied, nature is healing. so
I think, well, it had way less entries, though, right? Am I crazy?
So Thrasios Tindra had 19 entries and Atraxa had 28. So Thrasios Tindra is like sitting right around 20. So it's like not a ton of entries, but it's still, you know, 20 entries is fine. Yeah. That's why I have it at 10. It's a deck that it also had, like, you know, as opposed to like Tevish Krom, right, where it's got the lower, you know, number. We're still in the teens. Thrasios Tindra, I'm okay putting it at 10 because Thrasios Tindra just has been good for as long as I have been playing CEDH, right?
Whatever, boomer.
Actually, I've been playing CEDH longer than Thrasios and Tindra's existed, but. Regardless, Thrasios and Tindra at number 10, it's nice to see that deck coming back a little bit. People kind of figuring out how to play that deck a little bit differently than maybe we have in the past. And it turns out it's still good. So, Max, your number 9.
My number 9, going quickly to one we just talked about, is Talion the Kindly Lord, which is a deck that it's one of my decks I main currently. The list that Max B1 with is a deck that we've spent forever brewing together.
Yeah, awesome. You got your list on the database recently, didn't you?
Our Talion deck is not on the database. Okay. I got my Kinnon and my Obnixilis deck on the database right now. We forgot to submit Talion, which we probably should have. But that's our bad. But
come on, man.
the deck is really, really good. And people don't seem to, it's like the best pure control deck in the format. Yes, we're in a Rhystic Study format. It draws so many cards. It has the capability, both statically and on the stack, of hating on every possible type of win con. It's capable of stopping and shutting down anything. People don't realize how many win cons the deck actually has. It's a deck that can confidently win with Thoracle and protect it extremely well. It can win through Mnemonic Betrayal Lions. It has a very real, extreme, like I even say this is the way I win almost the most at this point, attrition plan, where the combination of life loss from Talion, Bloodchief's Ascension, Shieldred, Bowmasters, especially when you pair those attrition pieces with some explosive things like Wheels or Meme Bet with a Bloodchief's out where they just blink all the cards. And then the newest addition we've done is Hallbreaker Horror. Where Hallbreaker Horror is a card that we were off not thinking of for a long time because it's not an outlet commander in Talion, but the play pattern of letting the game develop and eventually just tutoring for Hallbreaker Horror, and it's a one card win con where you go infinite through rocks or clones with Dockside or whatever, and then all you need is one tutor, and you either get the One Ring or Bowmasters, and you infinitely blink that, and you just win the game on the spot. It's safe, it's protected, it's all at flash speed. I mean, the deck is absolutely crazy. And one of the things I've really loved about it is you get rewarded for your opponents playing the game, kind of like Nib-Mizzet, where I built Nib-Mizzet recently. And the big eye-opening experience for me with that deck is you get into these interaction battles on Niv, and you end up after the interaction battle with more cards in hand than when you started. It's like kind of fucking mind-blowing. You're like, how did I go up to 10 cards from 5
when I had 5 originally? Yeah.
Weird. But so Talion has a similar effect, not the same strength as Niv. Niv is better than Talion on the battlefield, but Talion is more consistent and has the consistency of black, which is really important for being able to win the game so confidently. The other thing that's great about the deck, because it's so deep on interaction and so much of that interaction is niche, you sometimes get to wait in your lines longer and tell people like, I don't have anything for this. And you're not lying, but you're letting other people interact at these moments that they think they have to interact. And then, you know, if they fight over the demonic consultation and they blow their action, the person who's casting it wins, and then the Thoracoleave bees in stack, and now you're like, well, now I'll use Trickbind. Thank you guys for blowing all of your resources. It lets you wait and be patient and get more cards of your opponents, which also draws you more cards. The deck is really fun to play. It can be taxing mentally because you do need to be locked in for long controlling games where every single interaction is very, very important. You can't fuck up.
That's part of why I took a little bit of a break. It's like my winter break from Tivit, where I just have played so much Tivit recently that I was like, I just need a deck that goes fast. Are we showing off our animals?
I think so.
I was not ready for the full dog scoop.
Oh, you weren't ready for that? Dude, she's my little baby. This is Suki.
Athena.
I was like, wait, where's Athena? Then I like just zoomed in on her little fat face.
See, come here. See, up. Hey, up. Are you going to be weird?
Aww, what a little cutie.
It's Athena. Are you a good girl? Oh, hi.
You guys have considerably larger lap friends than I do currently.
Yes, you are a big lap friend.
It was a good pet break. I think we
need that was good. That was good. All right, so we can go back on the bed. Oh, that was funny. A bunch of our episodes, like Suki just randomly jumps on my lap and starts kissing my face. And Max is like, it's the cutest thing to edit.
Talion's super hot. I'm a big fan. Ian, what is your number 9?
Well, Callahan, thank you for asking. My number 9 is the king of combos himself, Lord Kenrith, the high artificer. No, Lord Kenrith, King Kenrith, the old King K. He's just that like combo outlet, you know?
Yeah.
It's one of those things where you're like, hey, I want to play ad nauseam. And also, I would like to play random infinite mana combos. And also, PTD is the only one who ever plays this deck. But I guess he keeps doing well with it. So,
Kenrith had 24 entries and a 31% win percentage. So, like, not a bad month.
Yeah. I mean, all the kitten lines, too, are, like, wicked strong in the deck. Like, you have to play 5-color good stuff. Yeah, I said wicked. Shut up. It's the Boston episode.
Yo, it's fucking sick, bro.
Yeah, King Kenny's wicked good, dog. Yo.
I also have Kenrith at number 9 as well. Okay. I really like Kenrith. I think it's well-positioned. I think that and it's one of those decks that you can just play it in such a big variety of ways too. So it's like, okay, you want to play Ad Nauseam? Cool. You want to play Hermit Druid? Cool. You want to play, you know, whatever, go for it. Have fun, do your thing. And it's just, it's, you know, kind of what we were saying about Thrass Vile, but at 5 colors.
Yep.
Max, what is your number 8 for the month of November?
My number 8 is your honorable mention. It is Krom Tevish partner pairing, which is a deck that I've been super high on for a long time. I mean, I've always looked at Sharky's list and I've been a huge fan of it. It's kind of like I previously called it just like Grixis Turbo Wincons, but a little more mid-range with better resiliency, almost like the equivalent of Tim Najeska from Mardu, where it was like, instead of being pure only wincon, you have a little bit of mid-range value and interaction there. And I love how that's positioned right now. And then I also love what Ian did with it, where he took out a lot of the pure cards that just say, I win the game, which is fine. And he swapped it out with cards that are more, I'm going to continue the game and I'm going to have a little bit more mid-range resiliency here because we're in the big boy winter and my commander's a little longer and I just want to survive a bit. And I think that's fine. It's like a slightly different way to play the deck, but I think into the current mid-range meta, there's a lot of value in having those types of pieces. I really like that. Again, I'm a big fan of decks that can be built more than one way, especially for ranking them as a strong commander pairing. Like Kim Nathrasu is a great example. Right. There's that used to have like 10 decks on the database. And I like that Crom Tevish is now a little bit more of a mid-range list with Ian's paired with a little more pure turbo list of Sharkies, and both are very, very powerful. The commanders are great. I mean, having double card advantage at the command zone right now is one of the best things you can be doing. Tevish is just a busted card. Like, Tevish is actually broken, and getting to combo with Displacerkin and Hullbreaker is amazing. My favorite card, and I was so scared that you weren't running this when I first pulled up your list. Thank God you are on Mystic Reflection. That is a casual favorite of mine, and I saw it in Sharky's list the first time I ever looked at it, and I was like, that's... Thank God a CDH deck gets to use this, because that's so cool.
I've only used it once in the deck, but double box diving to ensure that I win the game is like pretty good. Like,
fucking wild.
I was like, oh, I need a lot of mana here, huh? Wait, okay. Oh, there's the one dockside. They each make 5. Yeah, I feel like I win here.
Ian, what is your pick for number 8 in November?
You know, the Warrior Princess has fallen far from grace. Yes. I got Najeela here at number 8. This has been happening in CEDH forever.
Yes.
Where Najeela will look like the best deck in the format. And then people will be like, well, what if I played a blocker? And then Najeela will suddenly stop doing really bad or start doing really bad. And then like it will pick back up again. And people are like, well, you can play Turbo Nuts. And then people are like, oh, yeah, Najeela. Like, I keep forgetting about it. I need to play blockers. And then, there's this cycle. And it's not just about blockers, right? But like realistically, when you're going up into these slower metas, right? So when people were getting greedy and they were getting carelessly greedy, that's a perfect opportunity for Najeela to take advantage of that type of meta, because they're light on interaction, they're light on combo pieces, they're light on combo disruptors, and Najeela can be like, yeah, sure, Final Fortune, Angels, or like, I know there was one list that was running Everybody Lives because of their Chance for Glories and their like all of that stuff, right? And they were just like, yeah, I'll go in for lethal, and I didn't get there, fine, sure, Everybody Lives, I don't die this turn, you know, crazy stuff like that, right? And so in metas where you can go for it with Najeela, and also then when you whiff, have just like attacker, like things were 4 to 6 months ago, Najeela starts to look very attractive, right? However, we look at the meta currently, right? And we're talking about decks like Talion. That is just a 3/4 that you have no obligation to ever attack with, right? Or like Tivit, right? Tivit, you don't want to hold Tivit back, but if you're under the threat of an Najeela about to come down, and by the way, Tivit can then proceed to just Deluge or Languish or like punish these decks a ton, right? Even Timnacrom is incentivized now with things like Dauntless Dismantler. It's like, yeah, I got this 1/4 back. I don't have to attack with Timna this turn, or I just play my creatures turn after turn so they have something back to stop this card, right? So there's a lot of reasons why Najeela doesn't, and it doesn't grind well. Like, that's the other big problem, is that like Najeela has a lot of things it can do. It does not handle your opponents going, yeah, we're sitting behind the Ristic Study. Nice Derevi. Here's a Pyroblast. Are you done? Like, and Najeela goes, yeah, I can't get my cards back. All right. Unless they have Samet, right? Like, that is the deck does not grind well at all. So I think in this meta now, where people are starting to once again sit behind those walls, right? Najeela just looks up at the wall and goes, you guys can let me in. Like,
and Najeela either wins really confidently or it's top decking.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
it's kind of it's one or the other.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
My number 8 for the month is Atraxa Grand Unifier. This is a deck that I had ranked 6th last month, and it's just kind of like it's been sitting in the 6 to 8 range for me for like a while now. It's a deck that I think is really strong, is really well positioned. I would like to see it be able to just perform a little bit more consistently. It had a just abysmal month, where it, that's not true. It was 28% win percentage. So I guess when you're comparing it to the month it had last month, right, where it like was almost up to like getting close to like a 40% win percentage. Atraxa, like, it feels like a big dip, but it's a deck that I think is really good. I don't know that it is as well positioned as some of these other decks. I actually think that the more we get into the more mid-rangey like format, the more I like Timna Thrasios over Atraxa. just because of the good old Thrasios Passios.
Max and I both did the exact same head motion of like, I don't know if we agree with that. Yeah.
I like Timnathrasios. Atraxa is just like, it fits so many categories of what a commander could be. You get to have something that's an outlet commander, a combo piece, card advantage, and it's like good.
Here's the issue, and this is honestly the crux of it, and this has been what I've been coming back to every time, is I keep seeing people put up results with it. I'm like, cool, awesome. And then I pick up the deck and play it for any extended period of time, and I'm just like, this deck does fucking nothing. And
here's why. I know this is I was going to bring this up, is because Atraxa is the antithesis of what you and I do as players, right? Because what Atraxa does, and this makes me so mad, because I've been talking to a lot of Atraxa pilots, and this is their, like, the secret sauce that they've been revealing, is either A, they cheat, or B,
I wasn't ready.
Sorry. I will politely abstain.
Or B, what they do is, they act like they're a mid-range deck, but they're not good at it, right? Atraxa is one of the most secretly parasitic decks in the format. Mm-hmm. And every single Atraxa pilot I've talked to who's done well lately has just said that. They're like, oh yeah, I'm not good at like actually doing stuff, but I'm good at kind of just sitting there and looking like I'm about to do a bunch of stuff, right? And if Atraxa doesn't resolve, I'm not doing anything.
Yeah.
No, the secret to Atraxa I've heard is you tutor for Rhystic Study and you do nothing for 8 turns.
Yeah. Yes.
That is all you do.
It's Rog Sai without red.
No, it's literally sit there, draw cards, find one of your 5 silence effects, try and cast a silence effect every turn until one of them sticks, and then you try and win.
Yeah. No, that's, you look at your hand, you go, oh, I guess I can't cast Atraxa. All right, I'll pass the turn. Or the my favorite thing Atraxa players have been doing lately, which is, oh, I can't interact. You guys got to let me have an Atraxa. It's like, no, we don't.
We need the ETB. We need the ETB.
You got to let me draw 7 cards. I'm so sorry.
You have a Fimage? You got a Fimage you want to use, right?
Got any more of those?
You got to let me get an entirely fresh hand for 7 mana. I'm so sorry. I want to help the table out. And it's like, the amount of times it works. It's crazy, but it works all the time because, you know, a lot of the times these grind games, and this is what Atraxa does, it parasites on the table. It's like, oh, I'm so sorry, guys. As soon as I get the 7 mana, I'll be super helpful. And it's like, okay, well, I'm going to resolve Atraxa a second time, and I guess I win. I was looking for answers, everybody. I promise.
All I'm finding is metamorphs.
All I'm finding is answer or is wins. Weird.
Yeah. Oh, man. I guess, so I can hold up interaction, I'm going to exile this Miss Hologriff into my Chrome Mock. It's for my counter spells.
Like, you guys want me to get rid of this board with a culling ritual, right? That's helpful.
I helped, right?
Yeah. So there's no Najeela tokens.
The deck's
anymore.
My number 7, but that's that's exactly the same stuff there. I think it's literally like I think we described it perfectly. It's like it works, right? Like it is an executable theory, right? But it is I know for a fact, Cal, you will never enjoy playing this deck because that is exactly the kind of used car salesman you have to be to play Atraxa.
No, I've piloted this deck one honest? Time.
That's the issue. This is something that people who have only played with me. Like a lot people who don't play with me will see me just like talking, right, and be like, oh, the Cal's politicking, and it's like, no, I'm just like genuinely telling you what the correct play is right now.
See, well, Cal, you have the problem of doing the opposite of what Max does, which is you sound like you're politicking when you're talking, whereas Max sounds like he's talking when he's politicking.
Yes.
No, but I was thinking, I never lie. I've never lied, but I bullshit away where, like, the one time I ever played Atraxa, I like, turned to, I look at him, I was like, I was casting Demonic Tutor, and they're like, that's fine. And I look at him, I was like, I'm supposed to just get, like, Rhystic Study, right? And he was like, yeah, probably. And I was like, okay. And I grabbed the Oracle because I had Demcon in hand. And then my next turn, I was like, oh, I really would like a Rhystic Study resolve. I'd like to be sure of that. Here's a silence. They were like, absolutely not. I never said
I just mislead people.
I was just like, oh, it'd be cool if a heuristic study would resolve. I did not get away with that turn. They called that bluff immediately.
That is 100% for me a too far one.
So I have a track set number 8. Moving on to number 7, Mr. Satellite, what do you have at 7?
At number 7, I have Kenrith the Returned King, which I have the least notes for out of any deck because I just wrote that it's really hard to place it because it can be built so many ways and it's really hard to like give an accurate, this is what the deck
do. What do you want me to say about this? It does everything.
It's sometimes it's a Nos deck, sometimes it's a Dockside Kenrith. Like the thing is, the big question is when you see a Kenrith deck at the table, do you give a fuck about Kenrith? That's the differentiator between the deck. Are you a deck built around abusing Kenrith, or are you just a 5-color pile and Kenrick is the Gathlight, and it gives you this mid-rangey outlet if you want it that maybe falls into a Fimage thing. But the deck is super good, and I love that because it has these such easy combos using just the graveyard and on the battlefield, and then the outlet is the commander that doesn't care about anything in your deck. Like, you look at a Thrasios deck, and you're like, okay, the outlet is Thrasios to draw your deck and do something with the cards. But with Kenrith, it's like, I can actually Demonic Consultation away my library, and as long as I have Dockside and Emile, or whatever combination that gives me infinite mana...
Dockside and Fimage, I'm GG's.
You are dead, and that's all I have to say about it, because you will be dying to this even if I have no library, which is super cool. The deck's very powerful, and it's one of those decks that I think is like been above expected win rate for like months and months and months in a row, and just not enough people are playing it, but everyone who does play it does pretty well with it. Because it's just a good deck.
I think it's the Thrasvile thing, right? Where it's just not super sexy. And it's just like, you know, Thras Timna's that way. You know, all those decks are just like, here's a bunch of good Christian magic.
Yeah.
go have fun, kids. And it's just like, it does the thing really well. But if you're wanting to get a, you know, get laid or whatever, it's not the... Not the sauce, but
it's funny you say good Christian magic. So we made a Discord for Colors Over Crutch, and I'm giving roles to all the people who play certain commanders. And for Kenrith, it's Kenny's missionaries.
That's amazing. Amazing. Ian, what do you have at number 7?
It was Atraxa. We already covered that.
Oh, I didn't know you said that. All right.
Yeah.
Atraxa, Grand Unifier. Yeah. Oh,
should we actually address the elephant in the room being the cheating scandal, right? I feel like we should at least like talk about it.
Yeah, sure. So Punny was cheating.
Yeah, so Punny name has been a long time Atraxa player. We don't know to the extent to which they were cheating. We know that they were caught during Chaos. Not Chaos, the Mythic Lotus sponsored Chaos series last weekend. We don't know the extent of their cheating. We know that they're like, I am aware at least that they had some suspicion thrown on them for quite some time. I don't know if like they actually had it. And the part of the report that Chaos laid out was they have a hard 6-month ban, and then they couldn't explicitly prove malicious intent, but like it was pretty clear that what they did was cheating at the time.
Just all I'm gonna do is just sit back and wait for Memo to release the eventual report.
Yeah, you're not wrong. But anyway, so there's a bit of an asterisk next to some of these Atraxa results because of obviously the allegations against Punny Name, seeing as they were an Atraxa player exclusively. Right. So
one thing that is nice is that if you do control for Punny in the Atraxa results, it still has good results. So it does not look as impressive, obviously, but it kind of... It still does well. So it's
like, just, even, you know, in the Mythic Lotus series that happened this weekend, there was an Atrax in the top 4. There was another Atrax in the top 16 that was on the play going into their pod. Right. Like it was still a very confident Atrax tournament, even getting rid of those results.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Punchy killed it this weekend for sure. Dude,
I'm so proud of Punchy. So proud of Punchy.
Yeah.
So, long story short, stop fucking cheating, people. So all you people are doing this for so that they can win and make their stats look good, and then they get caught and then their stats suddenly don't look good. Weird how that works. My number seven for the month of October is a deck that we have talked about, and it is Talion the Kindly Lord. Wow. I am moving it up a little bit. Talion had a nuts month.
I fuck with it.
30% win rate, had a 26% top 16 percentage. So 26% of the decks that were getting, it was a solid quarter of the Talion decks made top 16s. And then an, what was it? 8% top 4 percentage of those decks. So 4% of those decks, which if you want to know what that average number is, by the way, for decks that are the average top 16 number is 4%. So it's like doing or top 4%. You know, of decks. So it's right on curve for what it should be doing there. And I really like seeing, you know, control winter is real, boys and girls. I know it's a meme. What'd you say?
It's I'm with Alan. It's big boy winter.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, for the record, it's only November. And so it is still confidently Nezahal fall.
Okay.
It's in November, so winter is coming.
Winter is coming. Control winter is here.
But yeah, Talion is up three spots for me, and I'm really happy with how
draw some cards.
Wow. Love it. It's not just very often that I'm the straight man on this podcast.
This is what happens when you play with somebody at like every tournament, is that you just have a bunch of stupid shit you throw at each other.
It is funny though, dude. I've been having tossing my deck around to people, and like I've had a bunch of people cast Nezahal lately for the first time in their lives, and all of them have handed my deck back and they're like, Nezahal is cracked. I'm I'm for sure aware.
As somebody who's played Tassigar,
Nezahal's
cracked.
Nezahal is just better than Khan Sphinx significantly. Everyone, oh my god. You don't think so?
No. I'm selling. So? No. Every time some greedy fucker draws an extra card they shouldn't, and you get like six Khan Sphinx draws off of it, it's like...
Mm. Okay, but no one ever draws the extra cards when I have a Khan Sphinx. They deny all their draws. So that doesn't happen for me. But the other thing is like, when you play a Khan Sphinx though, the entire game revolves around you have to murder the Khan Sphinx. But when you play a Nezahal, people just accept the Nezahal. That's the difference. You're not the enemy and you're just drawing cards.
Can you... Wait, Nezahal's a dinosaur, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh yeah!
So you can use the new natural order for dinosaurs to get it.
That's kind of true. Funny.
You do have to sacrifice a creature with power 4 or greater.
That is also true.
Which does make it significantly worse.
I'm not going to sack my wandering archaic for that.
Yeah,
Tassigar.
What'd you say? Tassigar does Tassigar. It.
Yeah, Tassigar does.
There you go. It. Why neoform when you could just spend 4 mana instead?
When you could natural order, but worse.
That is, it was good. It was available.
Savage order, dude. It's so good.
Oh my goodness. Max, what is your number six for the month of November?
My number six should make our resident Sphinx simp happy. It's Tivit Cellar's Secrets. It is a deck that is really, really good. And is a deck that I was super low on for the last like few months, where I was just like, Tivit kind of sucks now. And that's because everyone was going really fucking fast. And Tivit's not good at keeping up when people are going really fucking fast. But now everyone's kind of chilling out. We're back in the Timna Thrasios grind. And Tivit's just like, Graf Digger's Cage, a Cursed Totem, a Silence Effect, and an A plus B combo, all on my big butt mana card advantage producing body. And it does that really, really well. And the thing about it is, so it's like a stacks control deck, which is cool. It gets a mana card advantage. It's got really high card quality, pretty low synergy. It's a deck that always can like kind of win. What I've really been impressed by when I've been watching people play it lately, I don't know if you've seen any of Temujin's games. I know you've been against it a couple times, but like I know our game was a little weird in Chaos when we played it. But like if you've seen his other games, the dude is so patient, and that's really the way to rock Tivit right now. You do not force anything. You just sit and wait. And chill. It's kind of like Atraxa, where you're just like, I'm not doing shit.
The only difference between Atraxa and Tivit is that you do kind of have to be the cop at the table when you're playing Tivit. And that was the toughest part about playing Tivit when it was going really fast, was you kind of had to be policing even more, which is like hard. And so it made it so that every bad decision you made was like just compounded so fastly. Whereas,
I mean, there's like, also the difference. Right now, I was just going to say,
like right now, you can kind of get bailed out from bad decisions because of how much slower the format is.
Yeah, you just have more time. You don't have to play a perfect game, and there's like ways to come back. And also, Tibbet has a lot of broad effects. It's not a lot of one for ones. Like a lot of Tibbet decks are on like Languish and stuff, where you're just like dealing with everything all at once, kind of on repeat, which is really good. But it does have this harder mindset where, like, if you're on Atraxa and your Urza Saga cracks, you can just get a Jeweled Lotus. And with Tibbet, you have to decide, do I get a Jeweled Lotus or do I get a Grafdigger's Cage? And like, that's actually a very difficult question that can severely change your game plan overall.
Yeah. Tivit, you have to be really good at reading the table, honestly.
Yeah.
You have to be really good at figuring out what is going on at the table and what your role is. I think
there's also a really interesting like conversation about Atraxa builds that are closer to that initial Tivit mentality of like a little more stacks control hybrid. Mm-hmm. But like because this has sort of been built one way, which is like, we don't really care about Grafdigger's Cage, but like we still use some things that care about Grafdigger's Cage. And it's just like kind of weird hybrid space where I think like there's technically some potential there for some more interesting stuff.
I mean, if you play Finale Devastation, you can still run Grafdigger's Cage. It's not like the end of the world if you have one non-bow.
You can also just grab from your graveyard too. Well, no, you can't.
They can't.
Not how that works. But,
you can help.
What's your number six?
My number six, being very different from Max, is Tivit, Seller of Secrets. You know, I think this, for all the unspecified reasons we haven't talked about. No, I mean, you summarized it perfectly, right? Tivit's on the uprise. It was doing kind of worse lately. I still think. It's struggling a bit to like turn that corner. And it's definitely like a frustrating part about playing the deck. But I think there's almost a world where you like slow it down like Talion a little bit and just kind of be like, yeah, whatever. Tivit will come down at some point, dog. I don't give a shit. Yep. Right. Like it's the thing is when Tivit gets overestimated, the deck's a lot worse. Yes. Right. And that's been the problem with like specifically me playing it. I just have not felt like I can resolve a Tivit and like go to combat once without them being like, the apocalypse is here. We must remove this Sphinx. And it's like, Jesus, people, relax. Yeah. Like, I think people like respecting the identity of mid range control deck is not there sometimes. And I think that's Tivit's biggest downfall.
Yeah.
But I think people were shifting Tivit for a little bit where they were really trying to rush out like turn two Tivits every fucking game. And that's just not the way.
Yeah. I've been preaching that for months, man. Like it's
well, that was the original thing people were doing with Tivit, which is why I didn't get recognized for a long time. And I was like, what if we slowed it down and maybe didn't do dumb things? And they were like, oh, okay. Like
you're cooking these secrets.
What if this was just like a blue white control finisher? All right. That's what it is. It's a blue white control deck that has access to black. And has a big finisher in the command zone. That's all the deck is. It's that easy. Yep. My number six is down five spots from last month, which is Najeela the Blade Blossom. I had Najeela had a really good October and then proceeded to have the worst month that it has had in like over a year. Najeela's down here. I still think it's like really good. It's just like one of those things where I think there's only like a handful of people who know how to play the deck through like any particular mid range or any particular meta. And, you know, it takes a lot of dedication to a very, generic deck. It takes a lot of dedication to a deck that is like hard to get excited about for most people. And you know, that's kind of how I feel about Najeela is, you know, if you're gonna play it in this metagame, you gotta fucking love that deck. And but if you're gonna play it in this metagame and you do fucking love that deck, you're gonna have some success because it's all right. Because the people who are committed to it will still steal games because one person at the table lets you get an attack through and then the game is over. It's wild.
Yeah.
So into the top five. Max, what do you have at number five?
I put a little bit more respect on our Phyrexian Angel Queen. I have Atraxa Grand Unifier at five because I do still think the deck is really, really powerful, even with the controversy around it right now. Like, my buddy Nato is obviously a freak on the deck. And I mean, he's had a ton of success with it. And it's been cool seeing other people pick it up. I know, you know, Punchy is still relatively new to Atraxa. You know, my buddy Atari has been playing it. Like a lot of people are picking this deck up and they're feeling really good about the deck. And it just, it has, I got a couple of notes here. I mean, like I said, the commander fits into three of the four primary categories that I have for commanders, where it's card advantage, combo piece, and an outlet. It's a deck that gets to run Culling Ritual, and decks that get to run Culling Ritual are almost just in their own category for me because the card is so broken in my eyes. It's a deck that pairs really high card quality with really solid synergy, where the pieces do all kind of work together. The deck does this whole sit around and wait thing, but it's also significantly more explosive than it's originally given credit for. It is maybe the best tutor deck in the format, having access to both black and green and using those really, really efficiently for what it needs to do. It's not one of the green decks tutoring for Dockside, but it like still gets all the pieces it needs for those specific moments, often using those green tutors to tutor out silence effects rather than mana ramp like Dockside. It's a deck with a real backup beat plan, which is really nice. Like having a commander that could just fucking kill someone, I've learned from Omnixilis, is really powerful, especially when you can gain back some life in this current like Bowmastery, we're going to ping your life down type of meta with Talion effects and attrition and all that. Getting to run so many silence effects is really, really powerful. The problems with it, you literally die to an REB, which kind of sucks. Like one really common woman, a red spell, kills you. You don't have a lot of recursion in the deck. So if your pieces get hit, your pieces are kind of just hit. And you have like maybe one Endurance or a Noxious Survival or an E-Wit to get something back. But if that doesn't go through, you're kind of fucked. So the deck doesn't have a ton of resiliency. And if you don't have a Rhystic Study or some One Ring Mystic or more or something or other, you're kind of just playing a land every turn until turn seven and then cast into Twaxa, seeing what happens. Yeah. But what happens is you hit. So that's cool.
Yeah. No, you're super duper not wrong. I mean, I sleeved up the deck recently, and I definitely have those games where I'm like, yeah, like I'll play a Kinnan. I've reduced my clock by a little bit. Like that's about it with the deck.
I
played a Mana Vault.
Flashback a couple months, no one was on Hallbreaker Horror, and I was wondering. I was like, Hallbreaker Horror seems great in Atraxa because Atraxa is an infinite outlet when you do the blink thing. So I'm a huge fan that Hallbreaker is seeing more play in more decks because like. Obviously, I play Kinnan. Like, I've abused Hallbreaker for a long time. And whenever I would bring up putting Hallbreaker in these various strategies, everyone would say, you're just used to having all the mana in the world. You don't know what the fuck you're talking about. But Hallbreaker is just broken.
Yeah.
Like, the card is nuts. And it wins with the ham sandwich. So, But yeah, Atraxa's good deck.
Yeah, Atraxa at number five. Ian, you had Atraxa at number five last month. What do you have at number five this month?
I got to say there. I feel like we did have had a good discussion on it before. I think the addition of Agatha Soul Cauldron and Kotsil specifically really gave the deck some ups. It's also like so hard to get this deck off my mind right now because literally last weekend I had two double Sisse pods and another pod after that with a Sisse in it. Sisse was in my top 16 as well. I mean, I don't know. Someone like Malcolm can show up and either A, miss like the top 16 of Expo by half a point and then top 16 like every event that he goes to with this deck pretty frequently. I know that I personally enjoy it quite a lot. It's a deck that has a lot of adaptability to it. I know that like when I brought it to Expo, I just missed top 16 on the bubble with it. And that includes some changes to the deck that I would make now that I'm like, we're just kind of strictly optimal that I messed up on. And like, little things like that are just like it is a deck that, as you mentioned before, the pivot potential, the explosivity, all of those things are really, really integral to what the deck does and its game plan. You know, I think there are definitely some adjustments that have to be made because I think like right now I optimized Tivit Sisse like 2 months ago, whereas I think I need to like optimize Sisse for where we are in the metagame right now. And I think it is a deck that definitely, if people aren't underestimating you, which I don't think I have the luxury of, you do sort of have to tailor it to what your expectations are a little bit more than other archetypes. But it's still, I mean, the ability to go like, oh, if one Dockside resolves, the game is over. And like I've had conversations with people like that in the pods where you know, like there's an active stacks piece stopping it and one other piece and person has counter spells. And I'm like, literally looking at my table being like, it doesn't matter. And then we'll talk to the Sissy pilot at the end. They were like, oh yeah, for sure. None of that mattered at all. And I was like, if I didn't convince them to do this thing that at the time, everyone was like, that seems a little egregious. And the Sissy pilot was like, no, you 100% needed to do that egregious thing right then, or else I would win the game. Right.
And that's
like,
exactly the amount of times that conversation comes up.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
What I've learned when you're going against Sissy, you like the only way to convince the table that they actually have to do something against Sissy that I've found to work for me, you need to explain the entire line of what Sissy is able to do with exactly all revealed information. So they have to look at you and just go, you're right. And they can't argue it. Because if you leave any unknown information, any squiggle room for some way out, then they're just like, I don't think I have to deal with this right now. And they leave it the fuck alone. And it's crazy. And I will say of the decks that I've like piloted at least 10, 15 times, I think Sissy might be the deck I have the highest win rate on of anything I've ever played. Like the deck is just crazy if you can fly under the radar.
Yeah.
Sissy is up there for my kill on sight commander list. Because it's every time I see it, it has kind of that Kinnan ability with it where every time I see it come down, I'm just like, you got to fucking deal with that. Like, immediately, or you're just gonna fucking lose. And like, that's, I have yet to be proven wrong with that rationale. My number five for November is up two spots from last month. It's Rograk Xylas. I think it's a top five deck. It has a lot of good stats. Although this month was maybe not its best month, it was actually a better month than it's had in a while. And it kind of looks anemic, which is weird. But like, I am appreciating this deck more the more I play Thrasios Vial, if that makes any sense. But I still ultimately think that every criticism that I've had of this deck still holds true. The deck is really all in on here's a bunch of mana and a breach or a bunch of mana and a Nauz, and I hope I win. And those aren't strategies that I'm a big fan of personally. But, you know, there's a reason I like Thrasios Vial, like personally, to play more, because I do like having something to fall back on. Because I can't tell you how many times I've been sitting in a pod with a Rograk Xylas deck who just tried to go for it on turn one or two, got stopped, and then sat there and did literally nothing the rest of the game. I generally want to play a deck that can get back into the game eventually, and doesn't need a Rhystic Study from the gods to win. Rog'Sai, I have at five. People, listen, if you don't like that I have it at number five and you think I need to have it at one, I don't know. It's my number five. Max, what do you have at number four?
Number four, I'm putting a little bit more respect on the Warrior Queen. I've got Najeela, who in my last time I did a rankings video, went like 2 months ago, I had Najeela as number one. Because Najeela was a deck that just terrified me. And it's kind of all the stuff we've already talked about, where it wins in every single imaginable way. And in the meta we were on at that
time, imagine as a Kinnan player, you would be very scared of Najeela.
Because, dude, I can fight against any different type of wincon it has. I can deal with all of them. But if you don't know which one they're going for, paired with the fact that it's also a deck that just plays Calling Ritual, kind of sucks. So, like, it can be really difficult to deal with. Where I'm like, okay, I've got my Manglehorn to stop the Grim Hireling and the Dockside, and I've got, you know, this to deal with this. And then they're like, okay, Derevi. Or they're like, okay, you know, just add Nauz. It just doesn't matter. They're always going to have some way of doing something. And yeah, I mean, the ability to just win from any position in such a diversity of ways still terrifies me. It is a card. It's literally one of the only cards in the game that if you mold to zero, and your top deck for turn one was a Jeweled Lotus, and you just Jeweled Lotus Najeela, theoretically,
you have a decent chance of winning that game.
Theoretically, you can win that game. Like, that's terrifying. If you never drew another card, you win in seven turns or something. It's stupid. So that part of Najeela, just the self-contained engine of it is kind of wild. And I do love that it's, I mean, if you're a deck that gets to also just have A+B combos, is paired with everything else it already has is pretty crazy. But yeah, I mean, the main weakness is just no card advantage in the command zone, which is in the current meta just such an important piece. And that's why I've dropped it down to four, because I have Majela as the weakest right now of what I call like my S tier of decks, which is my top four that I think are just a little bit above everything else. I kind of have them separate.
Okay. Ian, what do you have at number four?
I have Rog'Sai. I think it's a very strong deck in the hands of the correct pilots. I think it's definitely one of the most overrated decks in the format, just because people talk about it like it's this unbeatable, godly thing. I think there are certain pilots who are quite exceptional at playing it. I also know quite exceptional pilots who are in love with the deck and who have just been scrubbing hard lately with it and refuse to jump off of it. So it is what it is in that degree. I think it's a deck that asks you to take some pretty intense gambles, and it allows you to do that pretty early, which is very easy to do in the Swiss, but very hard to do in the top 16, because your gambles will fail more often in single elimination format. And, you know, once again, in a format where, in, you know, for example, a 7-round tournament, right, you can take those gambles 7 times and you really only need like 3 to 4 of them to pay off, right? For a lot of these tournaments to like advance to that next stage, right? But in a top 16, you can take that gamble once, right? You can take those risky plays, and a lot of the time the players are already in that heightened state of gameplay where they are trying to interact and they're trying to be respectful of the table in the top 16, right? Like, people don't just go into the top 16 like, oh, it's just another round. Like, they're like, no, this is my winning in for everybody,
right?
And because of that, they don't just let Rog'Sai get away with stuff. And therefore, I can't call it the best deck in the format. But it's also the deck in the format that if you don't respect it, you will lose to it 100%. So, you know, what's the expression? Put some respect in your mouth. Like, that kind of thing is like, yeah, like, absolutely. The deck is good and it deserves respect and it's powerful. But it is also not the end all be all, because smart players can get around it.
Yeah. Rog'Sai is like the best like high roller deck, I guess, if that makes sense. Like, if you like playing poker, Rog'Sai is a really good deck for you.
I don't want to equate it specifically with gambling, right? Because it's people who are taking smart risks, right? It is not just people who are closing their eyes and throwing the dice, right? It is specifically people who are making high percentage plays, right? But for someone like myself, like, I'm not the kind of person who wants to play a card like Veil of Summer, because I don't think that is a high percentage play, right? I think that is, there are chances where the floor is at zero for a card like that, right? So like, that is just a stylistic difference, right? Like, there's the people who are gonna be like, I'm gonna play the Veil of Summer, or I'm gonna, you know, crack my LED into a tutor, dump my whole hand, and I kind of read that they didn't have it, and if they have it, sucks to be me. Like, those are the kind of plays you need to be making, and they're not risky, they're not bad, they're just tough. And they're tough to make over and over again and do well with, you know.
Yeah, 100%. My number four for the month, this is where I have Sese Weatherlight Captain. I have had it at four now for 2 months in a row. I like Sese a lot. It is, I was getting a phone call. I don't know why it made that sound, because that's not my ringtone. But so my number four for the month is Sese Weatherlight Captain. I have had Sese here for 2 months now. And yeah, I mean, I think we have covered Sese pretty broadly speaking. I think the one thing I will add is and I think this really goes to show like how I like conceptualize things is, you know, we've talked a lot about the like the shiftiness of Sese, right? And, you know, a lot of people, you know, we have talked about this as a advantage of the deck, but also something that, you know, the deck, you know, isn't maybe as good as it could be or as other decks or something. I see the maneuverability of the deck as an advantage that maybe one other deck in the format has. Like, I think it is so insanely unique in what it is able to accomplish that it deserves this much respect. And I also just see it win because of that maneuverability so fucking much. So I really like having Sese up here. And it, again, it speaks to the type of magic that I play and I value, yeah. where I right. kind of have the maneuverable, the deck that's super maneuverable higher than I do mm-hmm. the, you know, eight or the, what is it? The super linear decks, you know?
Yeah. Makes sense.
So, now we're into our final three, number three, Max, what do you have?
Yeah. Which I just want to take one moment to say, when I'm ranking decks, I personally don't give a flying fuck about how hard it is to learn the deck. I'm imagining someone who is like very capable with the deck piloting it when I'm putting these in mm-hmm. order of what I think the decks are capable of. Mm-hmm. And I did just want to throw back when I meant to say this before, when I was thinking about Najila, like I think a really important piece, and I'm not aware of some of the old school Najila pilots, but like since I've been playing CDH, when I think of Najila, like the first three names that kind of come to my mind right now are Memo, Devrick, and Duke Niner, who are three accomplished Najila pilots who have like all won or have many top 16s with the deck. And all three of them are right now not playing Najila, which I think like losing out on some of those really consistent performers is probably making the deck look a little worse overall than it is.
No, definitely. That happens with decks all the time. I think just like the pilots are actually extremely integral to the process.
Right. And so, yeah, I mean, when I go into top three here, which I kind of want to bring this up because I think this deck, maybe more than any other deck in the format, in my opinion, pilot skill, I think, makes the biggest difference. And this one, obviously, it matters for every CDH deck, but I think for Rog's Eye, having an incredibly competent pilot that understands that strategy mm-hmm. and understands those percentages and understands those calculated risks and choosing the right decision and mm-hmm. so many tutors and what you're doing for and your sequencing and your windows, not just saying, I'm going to shoot the shot, not playing it like we fast, we ball, but playing it like, I'm going to accumulate my resource and pick my window perfectly and just doing all of that right on Rog's Eye. It's so, so difficult. And it is the deck that I think rewards perfect piloting almost more than any other one. So I just think like a lot of respect needs to be put on how hard it is to pilot that deck properly. Yeah. I mean, the deck is, when done right, it's really consistent. Like it's taking these calculated risks, but it's consistent in its capabilities with them. The deck is wildly synergistic in everything it's doing. It is also, because you're on like, you're going so deep on counterspells, you're on like days. Like it is one of the most interactive Grixis decks in its total number of interactive pieces, which means it actually is able to properly police sometimes when it does get into this heuristic study scenario where it doesn't have its Nas or as much mana as it wants, but it's going on the card advantage and it can like properly interact and keep the game going. It can absolutely always win from an empty board state out of nowhere, so you always have to be aware of it. I do think it is probably the best heuristic study Mystic Grimoire deck in the format. Lacks the protection of white, but it doesn't need it. Folds hard as fuck to stacks effects and genuinely gets absolutely railed by the fact that you are the main enemy at the table before a single land is even played.
It truly is wild that like Rograt, no matter who is playing it, no matter what the pod composition is that as soon as you sit down and you are playing, you reveal you're playing Rog's Eye, it is arch enemy, baby. Like it is, you have painted a giant red target on your chest.
Which, like Ian said, though, if you don't respect it, you lose. Like I had Rog's Eye in fourth seat in my top 16 pod at Expo, and it was Blue Farm into Mion Cannon into Dargo Temna, another turbo deck, into Rog's Eye, and I knew a capable Rog's Eye pilot, and I mulled all the way down to four, and I looked at that pod and I said, if I don't keep this fucking swan song on my mull to four, this game's not getting past turn three, and I have literally no shot of ever winning this game. And I kept the swan song, and if I didn't have the swan song for the Necro, we lose right there. And it's like, it's wild that you still have to respect it to that level when it's in 4C. You know what I mean? But that's just, it's the way it is. The deck is really good and really hard to play. Takes a lot of reps going through every stage from mulligans to sequencing. It's a really cool deck. And I've been playing it lately, and it's been really fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Number three, Ian, what do you have at number three?
Okay. So I'm going to start this one by going, okay, in a meta right now, say the meta game is slowing down, right?
In a society,
we live
in a meta game.
No. So hypothetically, if the meta game is slowing down, right? That it sort of insinuates that board states will become more clogged up, right? Yes, right. Okay, yes, no, it's fine. The card Tim the Weaver might hypothetically be worse positioned than it has been historically. hypothetically speaking, right? Right. So maybe, you know, a pilot posits that if you adjust and maybe get a more consistent card advantage engine in the command zone, but also keep the wonderful Krom, which is not.
You wouldn't be considering a planeswalker, would you?
maybe a planeswalker that every other turn, actually 2/3 of your turns, can draw you up to 4 cards. What? That's crazy.
You are on
kind
of wild, crack cocaine, dude. Ian.
There's no way. This hypothetical of a commander wouldn't have any combos with a kitten or a kraken, would it?
Oh, in fact, it does. Oh, it does. No, I mean, genuinely, I obviously I'm talking about Tevesh Krom. Obviously, I'm a little Tev Krom pilled right now because I just top 16'd and then won a tournament respectively in a row with it. So I've picked it up the first time before Chaos Treasure 8. I played the entire tournament by going 3-0-2 in the Swiss, and it just felt like Swiss cheese, just like a nice knife cutting right through everything. Like, it was so clean, it was so powerful, it was so efficient. The ability to pivot to infinite mana combos when I was worried about people decking me, like all like crazy stuff like that was just so sick. And then top 16 was just like it was a feel bad loss, and I was like, there's no way I'm not going back and repping the next week. And you know, I was able to take down the entire tournament with it. It felt so smooth. And yes, it sucks losing white, it sucks losing Ranger Captain, it sucks losing Timna, the card Silence, right? Like, all of these effects are very, very powerful in white, right? Savine's Reclamation, Intuition Lines, definitely things to lose. But you also gain upsides, like Max talking about, playing Displacer Kitten Lines is actually real. Playing Hullbreaker stuff is very real. Having two consistent engines that attack on a different axis is very real. Now, I think one thing I learned pretty early on when playing the deck that I think a lot of people mistake with the deck is I think a lot of people lead Tevesh. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Tevesh is the one to lead because you're right.
I thought somebody just got punched in the balls before I realized that was
my buddy's walking in the door right now, so there's going to be noise for 1 minute.
Nope. I think Suki disagrees with my point.
Yeah, she said, fuck that.
Suki's telling you that, you know.
Did you say a cat was there?
But yeah, like, leading with Krom, I feel like, is like one of the main advantages of the deck.
How is that not the prevailing knowledge?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know. But Krom's cracked.
So like, Krom is really, really good, but I think there's a huge difference between mid-range and turbo. And like, in my conversations with Sharky, you know, he's like, Tevesh is the commander, Krom's there for the colors, because you're trying to go quickly, and like, the quick personal card advantage that you get with Tevesh can be better in the short term for when you're trying to just like turbo win, rather than like, I'm just going to sit back and draw with Krom. And you're a little more designed for the sit back.
I agree, but I also found that I, on average, draw more cards with Krom. Like, just period. Like, in early game, mid game, like, you know, I'm just, yeah. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's the meta. But like, I don't know. The slower meta doesn't ring to me that I should be drawing more cards with Krom, right? I'm talking about like per turn rotation, right?
Fair.
Because what Krom or Tevesh on average, right? You divide 4 cards by 3 turns, right? And that's in the world where they aren't attacking Tevesh and attacking your Thralls, right? Which is extremely unlikely. I think I am drawing more than 4 cards per 3 turns rotations with Krom a lot of the time, like a significant amount of the time. So that's why I've been trying to lean towards that. And then also, as the game progresses, I think people are less likely to be like, oh God, a 5 mana commander, hit it with a Fierce Guardianship as that goes on. I don't know if that's been the case, but like, Tevesh feels like later in the game, people are less likely to make bad choices by just countering a Tevesh, right? Which is, I think, like, a little ridiculous.
But, well, I've also seen when I was playing against the Tevesh Krom before, and I guess there's probably most of the lists were closer to Sharky's, like, I was having people crack LEDs to cast Tevesh turn one, and I'm like, yes, I will force a roll that, and you will be out of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is a play pattern I've definitely leaned away from, although it is one that I have played in other Tevesh decks for sure. Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. I think the list is really solid right now, and it's almost hard to explain. But the main basis behind this is like, hey, you know, we have we're in a Ristic meta right now, right? So imagine having your Ristic and then also having this Krom to get you card advantage, and then also having this Tevesh to give you card advantage. And I'm playing Talion, I'm playing One Ring. Like, I'm not going to go through a game without saying, yeah, I drew at least 8 or 9 cards for my permanence, right? And like, that's that is the end goal that is going to achieve that goal. And it's hard to argue that like these two giant commanders that provide you a ton of advantage aren't worth investing in, right?
100%.
Big boy winner.
I think it feels like there's a little bit of recency bias with putting it through.
Yeah, for sure.
I agree with everything that you're saying. My number three is, to the shock and awe of everybody, Tivit, Seller of Secrets. Tivit had a really good month and started performing back to what it should be doing. It's Timnachrom without red, and it has really good the ability to just kind of play the game in this really mid-range meta. Tivit's going to run away with a lot of these games. So I love Tivit. I love seeing that it's doing well, and I love seeing that it's doing well and I don't have to do well on it to because there was a period of time there where nobody was doing well on it. So I was just like, man, if I don't do well on it. Tivit, I stand by. I think it's my contender for like one of the best decks in the format. And I think like my top three, in my opinion, I feel like just are the three decks that I think are the most solid in the format by like a lot. So that's kind of where I stand. But yeah, Tivit at number three, up two spots. Max, where do you have Kinnan? Is it at two or is it at one?
So I actively wanted to say, like, mentally, my one and two I have is like 1A and 1B. It's slivers between them. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's so hard. And it's because Timnachrom and Kinnan, they are the best at what each of them do in very different ways. Where, you know, I look at things in card quality or synergy are like my two broad categories. And Timnachrom is the best overall card quality in the format. You are just playing a pile of the best cards with not the most synergy and just really good card advantage to draw a lot of them. And then Kinnan, you're top decking Void Winnowers and Thorn Mammoths, and your average card quality might not be so good, but the synergy is off the
You're playing Timmy blockers. Commander.
Yes. But like, that's the thing, is Kinnan's strength is the synergy, and Timnachrom's is just the card quality. Right. And in the current meta, where we do need to draw so many cards, I have decided to put Timnachrom at one and Kinnan at two. And again, it's much more 1A, 1B, and it's super, super close. But I wouldn't feel completely honest if I said that Kinnan is just outright the best deck in the format right now. I think that TNK has a lot going for it, and it is like very well positioned right now to just be doing what it loves to do, where not only does it have the turbo win cons, where it can also just explosively win out of nowhere, especially with how the lists are currently being built, but they're so comfortable sitting back and drawing with Timna and drawing with Krom. But we're at number two, so let me talk about Kinnan. Kinnan is my favorite deck by a lot. I'm a big fan of Kinnan. I like grinding, and pretty much Kinnan is everything you could ever want in a commander. Yeah, I mean, Kinnan is all four categories. He is mana advantage, ridiculous mana advantage. He is card advantage through his activated ability. He's a combo piece, and he's an outlet, which is literally everything you could ever ask for on a two mana commander. That's just so easy to cast and so easy to get your engine started with. And what I do really love about the deck, and what I've come to love about the deck, is that I don't need Kinnan to win. So you were saying, like, you view Sisse in the same light as Kinnan, where you're like, oh, Sisse is in the battlefield, just murder it, and you don't have to think about the deck as much. Kinnan, I don't give a shit if you kill my Kinnan.
No, you have to continuously murder it.
No, but like, I've been loving the games lately where someone has a Drain of Madness out and Kinnan's just not even an option on the table, because I get to point at that and say there's a Drainith, and people for once in a fucking moon will leave me alone and not touch my shit because they don't think I have Kinnan, so they think I just can't do enough. And then so I finally have the freedom to just develop. Well, the secret sauce with stopping Kinnan is the Kinnan doesn't matter. It's the mana sources that matter. You need to hit the rocks and the dorks, and then the deck doesn't function. If you just hit the Kinnan and you leave all my mana sources, I don't give a shit. Like, it is almost genuinely better 100%. To kill my elves than it is to kill my Kinnan, because Kinnan makes the elves better. If you kill Kinnan, I still have the mana for the elves. Yeah, board wipes are really good against the deck. Like, that's kind of the shit. But yeah, I mean, the deck is, you get an A plus B plus, you know, sort of a little bit of C combo with Basalt, and I do like having access to that. It's a deck that can influence the game in incredibly unique ways. It's the only deck that confidently plays stuff like Void Winnower and Wandering Archaic and Nyx Blue Mansion. It's a deck that is somewhat affected by a pretty wide range of stacks, but is generically less affected by those stacks pieces than your opponents are. So you play through them really, really comfortably and can usually come out ahead. My favorite thing about the deck recently has been the inclusion of Trinisphere, which is just like absolutely insane in even the current meta, where I used to have this fear of Trinisphere, and I used to think it had to be like played on turn one or turn two before people got their mana down, or it was a bad card and it's just a king making piece of shit. But in actuality, how it works is it's super nice in the mid range meta, because you can just confidently play it in the mid game when everyone has like eight mana. And so no one counters it because everyone has mana and doesn't want to waste interaction on it. And then it just chokes people on their mana. And when you make the most mana and you choke people on their mana, you confidently come out ahead. And it ends up functioning right, almost like a grand arbiter, where you can count the number of pieces of interaction that someone can have to stop you. And generally you can play through them just because you make the most mana by so much. Deck's really fun. Deck definitely rewards understanding how to pilot it. I think it's a deck that really rewards an understanding of your opponents a little more than others, because it, depending on if you're doing it proactively or reactively, I choose a much more reactive build, where like understanding when to not do something reactive and just be like, I'm going to tutor for a Mega Horn and little stuff like that. Those little pivots with how you play the deck are really the big difference, I think, in like succeeding with it or not. When you're not just going for like, I'm going to make seven mana and spin Kinnan, that is a losing strategy. So like knowing how to just like sit back and be a little patient with things and interact at the right moments, it really rewards like an understanding of what things to go for in what moments and understanding what your opponents are doing and how to properly interact with them. Deck's super fun. I will probably always champion it. It will probably always be my favorite deck in the format. And I love it. It's obviously a bit of a passion project for me at this point.
Yeah, that's Kinnan, super solid. It's a deck that we here on the channel have been proclaiming as the best deck in the format for a minute. Ian, do you have it at one or do you have it at two?
I had it at one, but Max brought up a good argument. I don't know. When we both have the same top 1A and 1B, yeah, right? Like it really is hard to say which one is better at a given moment. Literally per tournament, it could be different, per meta, per understanding, per pod, right? Like it really, it's a super innocuous choice for me personally. Kinnan is hyper explosive, hyper efficient, really good at flipping into things that people just do not have answers for, because the rest of the format doesn't require that you make such crazy choices. I think Max said it perfectly, like you need Culling Ritual to stop, yeah, it, basically, right? Blue Farm is the pivot deck of the format. I've literally been in my coaching sessions talking about how pivoting is the integral strategy to be able to win right now, right? The ability to go, I'm just going to grind a Timna, or I'm going to Chrom, and I'm not even going to cast any spells. And then within a heartbeat go, no, Final Fortune, I'm winning the game right now. Like no deck does that better than Timna Chrom. So, having a conversation about which one of them is innocuously better in any vacuum doesn't really make any sense, because they're both insane. Right.
Yep.
Yeah. They're kind of a tier above. Just those two. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I have Kinnan at two and Timna Chrom at one. Very same situation. It's 1A, 1B. How do you want me to split it up, right? It's just like, I did move Timna Chrom up to number one. They were at number three, and that movement is very much because of the mid-range movement. It's also had like three very solid like tournament result months in a row. So it's definitely doing well. Now I've got dog hair all over me. but yeah, it's what am I supposed to say about Timna Chrom and Kinnan that hasn't already been said a million times on this show and by you guys and everybody? They're two best decks in the format, and such a fucking cute dog.
Thank you.
But yeah, that's what I got there. So that wraps it up for us. That is our top 10 for the month of November. Max, for people who like you, where can they find you out there on the internet? What are you up to?
Yeah, so I am a co-host of a YouTube podcast channel called Colors or a Crutch, which is co-hosted by Max Pfefferman, who is the guy who top 16 Top Deck Expo on Talion. Now we call him the Talion Man. So yeah, we have a YouTube channel there, which would be awesome if you guys could check out. I can be found on Twitter or Discord under Wounded Satellite. I'm an admin on the Kinnan Discord and the Elevir Discord and the Talion Discord. So I'm also around those spots if you have any questions about those decks. Been an awesome time. Appreciate you guys.
Yeah, appreciate you. Ian, What are you going to be up to over the next few weeks?
So yeah, PAX Unplugged is this weekend. By the time you heard it, it's last weekend.
Remember, this is in the past.
This is in the past. Yeah, time is an abstract concept that we as humans have created to represent the progression of reality itself. No, So next. this weekend I'll have people in Philly and it'd be cool. The weekend after that, I'm debating whether I'm doing Mox Masters, or I think that there might be like a get together between some Philly creators, and I'm probably gonna go to that and draft and do
more fun stuff.
Seems I like being in person with people that I haven't seen in months, so I'm probably gonna do that despite professional obligations. Mm-hmm. After that, there is the place where Festival of Nights was held in Wilkes-Barre. There's gonna be like a 64 player event, which I'm probably gonna head out to, which is pretty cool. And yeah, you can find me on the internet over at Comedian MTG. As you heard in this episode, I recently won the most recent Mythic Lotus online event. Pretty sick. If you're interested in CDH coaching and all that, you can find me over at comedianmtg@gmail.com, Twitter and YouTube, any of those places, and all that stuff's in my description, so you can easily find me there. So
how do you guys want to end this episode? What are we thinking this week? We've done some
I think the only way to end it is more pets.
I have so many dogs here. That is a cute kitty.
Athena, where are you at? Why are you in the other room?
Oh, the pickles.
What are you doing? Hi.
So I have my dog, Suki, and then there's this big boy. Oh, my God. Here. Hello, pickle.
Oh, wow.
Athena.
In the hole.
Oh. Girl, come here. You're being weird.
Tried to show pickles to the cam. Oh, come here, Suki, baby.
Pet cam is very important.
What a precious dog.
I've had her since she was 8 pounds.
Oh my God.
She's my baby. We fall asleep every night. She falls asleep with her head on a pillow under the covers being spooned.
Adorable.
Yeah. This is my
dog is a menace. My dog so my dog is a healer. So she is constantly working. And by working, I mean she is hurting me and my wife constantly. If we are not, the only time she relaxes is when Cassidy is not at home. And any other time, she is trying to get the two of us into the same place. And then if we're in the same place, we can't do anything. We just have to be in the same place. If we want to cuddle, if we want to, kiss, anything, I needed her when I was in high school. And that's all in this episode. Thanks for listening to Mind Sculptors. I'm Callahan.
Bye.
See you next week.